Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to The Parenthood. When you become a parent, you reevaluate the risks in your life. As you welcome your child into the world, you realise how much they depend on you and the impact on their life if you weren't around to support them. When your child starts walking, climbing, hanging and falling, you're constantly assessing the risks around you, from killer plugs to steep stairs. But you realise too that risk is an important part of living a full and rewarding life. In fact, a life with no risk is so boring you'd have to ask if it's worth living. When my husband climbed Everest this year, we had endless conversations with my children about calculating risk, that fine balance of living life to the full but not being reckless. Well, my guest today is a man who has written a whole book about fathers who take risk to another level. Daredevil Dads chronicles the lives of a group of men whose jobs are some of the most dangerous on the planet. Tam Rodwell, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I've been loving Daredevil Dads. I've been reading it to the kids. And you know what? For them, it's really refreshing that their daddy doesn't have the most dangerous job on the planet. But what inspired you to write the book?
I've always been sort of fascinated with people's, I suppose, different takes on fear. You know, you all sort of grew up with that kid who was not scared to jump off the roof, you know, and I was sort of always that one who was a bit reluctant because I thought if I do that, I'm going to hurt myself. So I kind of took that sort of concept and then broadened a little bit by including people that were fathers, because obviously that's a risk in itself. And if you have children and something happens to you, you know, you leave people behind. So I kind of melted those two things together and sort of came up with the concept.
Yeah. Are you a daredevil dad yourself?
No, I'm not. I wish I was. I've always dreamed of doing those amazing things, but I think I was always just a little bit too scared of the end result. So I kind of opted out and chose a safer career in life.
Yeah. I think risk is something that all of us parents obsess over. For me, I remember it started when I was pregnant and I ate tara masala one day and I suddenly thought, oh my God, what have I done to my baby? And of course, it was absolutely fine because it's fine to eat tara masala. But I always say to girls on the bump class, you know, you've got to try and stop the worrying, because while you've got a baby in your tummy, you can totally control that baby. But once they start crawling and walking and going to school and then, you know, going off on a gap year, you suddenly lose control, but you kind of can't keep them too close. What's your attitude to risk? And did writing the book and meeting all these amazing people change your attitude to risk?
I think it was sort of fascinating for me to find out that they actually don't perceive it as that risky. Time and time again, they would say things like, well, you know, it's just as dangerous to get in your car and drive down the highway. So, I mean, you know, the things that they're doing are, you know, there's astronauts, there's paratroopers, like really quite dangerous jobs. But they sort of see it as a kind of a calculated risk. They know what's involved, they're prepared for it, and they pretty much sort of they have confidence in their own ability to be able to come through in that situation. You know, it's not, there's very little sort of guesswork, I suppose you could say, and that's pretty typical of most of the guys in the book, I think, though. They're very confident with their own abilities.
Yeah, no, and that makes total sense. You know, you look at, you did a chapter on Evel Knievel, and he didn't just get on a motorbike and think, right, what can I jump over? He obviously spends a lot of time and energy and, you know, has a whole team of people assessing the risk of what he's going to do and trying to mitigate that risk.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, it was, Evel Knievel was the godfather of modern day extreme sports, I suppose. So, you know, it was just kind of looking how it all started. And, you know, most little kids sort of know his name, even though he's been dead for quite a while. It's, something that they sort of look up to. And, I always dreamed of jumping over buses or whatnot. But, these guys sort of looked at him and then kind of moulded their career on him, I guess, a little bit.
Well, it was interesting with Evel Knievel, whose son also did that kind of thing, but the grandson was very risk averse and he was very happy to leave the dramatics up to his father and grandfather.
I think it sort of skipped a generation. Because I asked the granddaughter of Evel Knievel to actually write the foreword for the book, and that was kind of an interesting concept because she obviously was her grandfather was Evel Knievel wasn't jumping when she was when he was alive when she was but her father, Robbie Knievel, was a famous jumper as well, and she sort of lived through that kind of emotion of seeing her dad take risks every single day. And it was interesting to get that sort of perspective from a child and the worry that she felt all the time, knowing that he could die, literally at any moment. So it's that was a really fun part of the book to sort of get to know her and find out all about the world that she sort of lived in.
Because it's different. I wonder how many of them, that their attitude to risk changed once they became parents, because a lot of them had obviously started these careers before they became parents. And certainly for me, and I think for Ben, my husband, he definitely reevaluated his attitude to risk since we've had children. That doesn't mean he doesn't do it anymore, but it makes you realize how lost the people you love the most would be without you.
Yeah, I think also that they really, a lot of them could never give it up. It is who they are, and I think they're all aware that it's dangerous, but they just sort of, I guess the overlying thing was they just couldn't stop themselves doing it because that's what they were just born to do, and it's, they try really hard to kind of keep it safe, but they know it's a risk, and they have lots of conversations with their partners about, should I do this and should I do that? And many of them have had life-threatening, situations where they have died and been brought back, so that's very scary. And I did a chapter on a wingsuit pilot, and he actually had a double parachute malfunction, and that was a turning point in his life, and he realised that he just couldn't do it anymore, and he walked away from the sport after that point.
Survive that double parachute malfunction?
He just got his second one untangled within a couple of seconds too late, and he would have not had enough. He would have just hit the ground, basically. So he just had enough that he was able to get down to the ground safely. But that was a really scary moment for him. And that was, just someone who just couldn't do it anymore. And he just thought about his daughter and leaving her behind. And that was it. So he's kind of walked away from the whole thing now. So there's a few incidents like that in the book where men sort of really reevaluated their life choices after something like that happens.
Who do you think is the most daredevil character in the book?
Oh, that's a really hard one. I don't know. I think I'm a surfer myself, so I did a chapter on Shane Dorian, who's one of the most famous big wave surfers in the world. And I mean, it's perhaps because I can relate to it a little bit, but these guys are they're pushing the boundaries of the kind of waves that are the size of massive buildings, and they're getting held underwater for sometimes, a minute at a time, being thrashed around. And I just marvel at it. I just can't believe they can do it. It's so unbelievable.
Yeah, and I suppose when it comes to the sea, it's a beast in itself. It's unpredictable.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
totally, yeah.
And, it's so much of it is out of your control. You can be really organized. You can have made sure you've made it as safe as possible. But, the sea throws stuff at us that...
Yep, it doesn't really care who you are. So it's a fascinating chapter. But it was, nice to be able to sort of meet people and have them really sort of open up, because I think it's quite a new concept. I mean, they've been interviewed obviously multiple times, but never actually solely about kind of being a parent, So a lot of people really wouldn't normally do interviews, I suppose, gave me a lot of their, personal information, they're really kind of their inner hopes and fears about, what it's like raising children. So that was really nice.
And some of them hadn't even been interviewed at all. I mean, the smoke jumper, he hadn't told his story at all, had
no,
he?
No, yeah. I mean, I found a lot of really obscure jobs that, I'd never even heard of a smoke jumper when I first started. And
so let's just clarify, what is a smoke jumper?
A smoke jumper is basically an aerial firefighter. They parachute into areas where small scrub fires have started, and they actually put them out by hand, so they don't have any water or anything. So they might dig a trench around the fire itself, so it can kind of burn itself out. So they're the kind of guys who stop the big fires before they get going in areas that you just couldn't get to by a car. You can only get there by a plane. So,
and obviously the risk is sort of twofold because you're parachuting into often a sort of wooded place.
He's landed in trees, you know, like more times than you can count. And, you know, he says that once he's been caught in a few bushfires and that they can actually, like, bushfires can burn faster than you can run sometimes. That's what he said. So he's literally been chased by flames, you know, on multiple occasions. So it's pretty risky, and you know, and there's no one there to help you. You know, you've got to get yourself out of there. They sort of have to hike out at the end of the day when they finish their day's work. So it's pretty full on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The idea of being parachuted into a fire that everyone else is running away from, but it it's the only way to stop it, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really. I mean, the small fire like can turn into a large fire, especially. I mean, he's working in Northern California, and the you know the kind of climate they have up there, and the fuel that will burn is just, the fires can just take off so quickly. So that's why they, I mean, there's only 450 I think smoke jumpers in the USA, so it's a very small amount of people.
And they just do it in the USA, do they?
They do it in other parts of the world, but that's Northern California is particularly like famous for them. Yeah, they're a very specialized group though. So,
and did you ever find that it had an impact on the relationship with their partner? Because obviously it's one thing if you're taking this risk, but you know, did any of them have an experience where their partners just said, I can't deal with this anymore on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a few. There's been a few divorces throughout the book. You know, a lot of people couldn't handle it.
I mean, being an astronaut, for example, not only is that risky, but you're gone for very long periods of time.
Yeah, he was gone for sometimes up to 160 days at a time. So he was essentially like leaving his wife at home to, you know, raise five kids by herself and stuff. But I mean, she understood that that's what he wanted to do, and he was never going to be happy unless he did it. So, you know, I think a lot of the partners that these guys have are really understanding, you know, and I mean, you would probably know yourself from what Ben does, you know, he has to do what he wants to do, and you know, you need to sort of support that as best you can. I think
I mean, I think it depends slightly what you sign up to. You know, he proposed to me when he'd rowed across the Atlantic, so I kind of knew this was what I was getting involved in. I think I'd feel differently if he was like an accountant and then was like, oh, you know what, I'm going to climb Everest because I'm having a bit of a midlife crisis, and I think I'd find that harder to deal with. But you know, I've got friends who've got, you know, husbands who are in the army or are often away for long periods of time, or even, you know, in special forces. And that, you know, the one thing I take solace of with Ben is that no one's actually trying to kill him when he goes away. But I think, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, if someone's clear about it as you kind of make that commitment, then it's a little bit more difficult to say, mind you can always change your mind.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you feel that you've obviously got two children yourself.
I do, yes.
You've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Yeah, Lily, Josephine and Huey.
And did you find that writing this book and being around so many of these daredevil dads, it altered your attitude to parenting and how we parent our children?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think I noticed with the book is that many of the children of the men are actually like are kind of following in the footsteps of their fathers, you know, and that's pretty scary, I suppose, for them. I mean, a lot of them are a little bit worried about it. A lot of them encourage it. It was sort of a bit, it was no kind of clear. No one was exactly the same, but I guess, I mean, I'm not particularly daredevil inclined. I'm not sure my kids are either. But
do you think as a society we wrap our kids up in cotton wool too much?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was brought up in Tasmania, in essentially like a small country town. So, you know, there were no soft play centres or anything like that. So I often sometimes find I can't really experience the same kind of upbringing that I had with my own children, because London's such a different place. So I sort of stand around in soft play centres where everything's kind of safe and
risk assessed.
And risk assessed. And I sort of wonder, this really wasn't what my childhood was like. So, you know, we try and get them out in the country as much as possible and let them run around and kind of, you know, fall over, but not too much. But yeah, I guess it's, you know.
Well, that's how they learn, isn't it? You know, you've got to fall out of a tree or fall down some stairs to realise that you can fall down some stairs.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a good analogy for life. I mean, there's, you know, whether it's like mental or physical experiences, there's very rarely a nice cushy mat at the bottom when you fall out of or get into trouble, you know. So I'm not sure soft play centres are really the best place for kids to learn about what's going to happen in real life.
Yeah. And also, I suppose there's an argument too that it's better for them to sort of take those risks when they're younger, and their bodies are less likely to get damaged or more likely to recover more quickly. I mean, your bones are more malleable when you're younger.
Well, I think probably for that very reason, yeah, definitely.
I think I'd rather have my child decide to jump out of a tree when he's 8 as opposed to 18 and maybe had a few beers.
Yeah.
And everyone around him has had beers. Yeah, I mean, I think I give my kids knives and we've had cuts and, you know, and it's all fine, you know, a few stitches at the worst case scenario, and they learn how to use a knife. But I guess if you're not exposing them to that, then, you know, one of our job is to really prepare them for life, and life is not going to be always a soft play area.
No, it's not. And especially in you know, a big city like London, I suppose it's I mean, I sort of try not to think about it too much, but yeah, I mean, they're going to face a lot of you know, pretty scary situations, I guess, in the coming years. So, you know, we try and do our best to kind of perhaps, you know, prepare them for that. So
when writing the book, I mean, you've obviously got an amazing collection of people that you've interviewed. Who did you enjoy meeting the most? Who was the most inspiring, I suppose, out of all your interviews?
Well, a lot of them were done via on the phone and via email, but I was lucky enough to meet Damon Hill, who I've always really admired as a sportsman. So that was pretty amazing. I was very starstruck and tried to be very cool, and I'm not sure it would work, but yeah, he was just so nice, just the most humblest guy you've ever met.
Really,
You know, people always sort of say you should never meet your heroes because they're never the same in real life, but he was totally awesome. So, yeah.
And that's a great message, I think, for children, that success shouldn't go to your head, and that actually you've almost got more of a responsibility to be humble and down to earth if you are in the sort of public eye, if you are a sort of adored character. That, you know, those manners apply to all of us, however, you know, amazing and successful you are. And which was your, which did you enjoy writing the most? Which story inspired you the most?
I think I probably really enjoyed writing The Smoke Jumper, because I sort of found him almost by accident, and it was a job that I had no idea that even...
How did you find him?
I just wrote to a guy who ran a fire website, like a fire aviation site. I said, look, do you have anyone who's done anything kind of crazy in the world of firefighting? And he's like, yeah, I've got a guy. And he obviously had to have a child as well to qualify for the book. Yeah, and he says he's 70 now. I think he's been fighting fires for 50 years. And he's sort of written a few things, and his wife had always been badgering him to kind of write his life story. And then I sort of came along and did it for him. So he was... I was really happy that he was happy that someone had taken interest in his life and kind of written it down. And he's in the last year since I've written the book, he's actually been diagnosed with cancer, so he's quite ill. So it's sort of a nice little kind of a something nice for him, I suppose, you know, to get a really good catalogue of his life. And it was pretty special. So yeah, really,
yeah. I mean, because I'm sure there are so many people in life who were incredibly brave and incredibly daring, whose lives went undocumented, if you think 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's just not a it's not a well-known profession, you know. It's like different if you're a Formula One driver, everyone knows who you are, but like someone like him is just completely obscure. And you know, he's responsible for saving thousands of lives and land and livestock, you know, over the course of his career, and he just never been acknowledged. So it's nice to kind of get those guys a bit of or get them in the public eye and get it out there. So
yeah, and also putting them on the same platform as someone like Damon Hill, who is sort of internationally known.
Definitely,
and
yeah. There's a few people in the book like that who are completely obscure, and yeah, it's really they're really pleased to kind of, you know, be acknowledged along with people like Damon.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me was that these men are very brave. And they, you know, risk is a big part of their everyday life, but that doesn't stop them from being sensitive. And I think that's a really important message for our children, that, you know, being a man isn't all about being gung-ho and, you know, not being allowed to be emotional. I think that's possibly one way that we parents are bringing up our children maybe slightly differently in this generation. Did it strike you that they were there any that weren't very sensitive? I know that you mentioned, or that Evan Knievel's granddaughter said, you know, he was badass, but he was actually one of the most sensitive people you'd ever meet.
Yeah, I think they sort of, they were all pretty, I guess because they face risk every day, they kind of, maybe they appreciated more of what they had because they'd been so close to death so many times. I think that was perhaps a bit of an underlying theme of the book. Most people don't think about dying, I suppose, but these guys face it every day. So they really kind of appreciated their time with their family and knew how much it meant, you know, if they were to kind of, something was to happen. So I suppose that was something interesting about them. They weren't as scared to talk about it as I thought they might have been, you know. So that was good for them to open up and tell me all about that.
So one of the things that struck me is that you talked about parenting as well as their exploits and their experiences of parents, and you asked them whether or not, you know, they would have done anything differently. And the smoke jumper said, you know, if I look back, I mean, how old is he now?
He's 70 odd now.
Yeah, so he's got grandchildren. And you said, you know, is there anything you'd have done differently as a parent? And he didn't say, I'd have chosen a more sedate job. I would have chosen a job that worried my children less. He said, you know, at the end of the day, what I realize was that spending time with your children is the most precious thing. And he said, I wish I was very focused on my career and I loved it and it was very rewarding, but I wish I hadn't been so preoccupied by my career. I wish we'd had 2-week holiday instead of a 1-week holiday.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, and it was a sort of simple holiday, but he said it just makes you realize that time is the most precious thing you can give your kids.
Yeah, I think it was a really delicate balance with almost all of the men in the book, you know, because they had the kind of jobs that were really challenging and it kind of required a lot of their time, I guess. And, you know, it was trying to find the balance between making themselves happy and being fulfilled and also spending time with their kids. And I think most of them got it pretty right. I mean, you're always going to have a few regrets, but, you know, at the end of the day, they were happy within themselves. And I think for me, that's probably the thing I really enjoyed about sort of finding out, is that if you're not happy within yourself, it's very difficult to be a happy parent and to parent well. So that was a really good lesson for me, I think, you know, that they're a little bit selfish in some ways, but that also paid dividends because they were, you know, really engaged with their children and they were really, like, sort of, they enjoyed doing things with their kids and their kids being a part of what they did as well, and they could just sort of enjoy it together. So that was nice.
And it makes you realise, you mentioned this in your introduction, that, you know, parenting is a great leveller. And actually, wherever you come from, whether you're Damon Hill or, you know, a surfer or you or me, anyone really, what we want is the best for our kids. You know, we love them so much, we will do anything to make them happy and content and make them into strong, happy, well-balanced individuals. And whatever your job is, you know, that's probably the thing that you will be most grateful for in life.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yep.
And one of my favourite quotes is, you said, parenting, as you'll discover, levels the playing field no matter who you are. You see, at 3 a.m. when a baby is crying, no one cares that you can jump 14 buses on a motorbike.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. I think, you know, they gave up a lot of really funny stories about, you know, parenting failures, I suppose, and it just kind of just brought home the fact that even though they could do these amazing things, they were just exactly the same as you and I, and they'd made so many mistakes, and you know, and it's nice to see that sort of human side of people, because a lot of these guys are, you know, very famous, and, you know, you only really see the glitz and the glamour, but and this book sort of just gives them that kind of bit more of the human touch, and it was nice to kind of write about that and, you know, get something out of them that nobody's ever got out of them before. So that was good.
What was your best story when it came to parenting fails? Because that's something you asked all your interviews, wasn't it? The what was your biggest parenting fail?
Yeah, I think the best one, I think, was about Damon, who's actually in the second book. He's not in this one, but Yeah, he was, I think back when his kids were about 4 years old, he was taking them in a double buggy and he was running a little bit late and he actually like crashed it and they both fell out and got bloodied on the sidewalk. He fell over the top of them as well. But, you know,
this is in public, is it?
Yeah, in public. But the interesting thing is at that exact same time, he was beating Michael Schumacher, who was probably the best driver of all time. So he could beat Michael Schumacher, but he couldn't essentially control a plastic chair with four wheels. So, you know, that was pretty funny. So a lot of people were quite amazed I got that out of him, but it was probably one of the best stories in the book.
Well, he'd probably never been interviewed about being a parent before. He'd probably only been talking about his Formula One career.
Yeah, mostly. But yeah, I really dug quite deep with a lot of them, and you know, I got some really good gems of stories like that came out of it. So that was really interesting.
Well, Daredevil Dads is out now. It's available on Amazon. I'm sure that listening to this, you'll be as aware as I am that it's a brilliant book. I've been really enjoying reading it to my kids. I think, you know, as they get a bit older, they like having a bit of nonfiction mixed in with the fiction. And it's something that has given us lots of food for thought as a family. So, Tam, thank you so much for coming along today.
All right, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Really enjoyed having you. You mentioned you're in the middle of writing your second book.
Yeah, it's Daredevil Dads Part 2. I had so many men in the mix that we had to do a second book, so that'll be out in a couple of months, I hope. So
yeah. In that book, you've interviewed Damon Hill, you mentioned. Anyone else?
Saranoff Fiennes, the famous explorer, and lots of other people, firemen, everything that you could sort of think of. So yeah.
Perfect. Well, that's available on Amazon. Do take a look at it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Parenthood. Please do share our podcast if you've enjoyed listening to it. And if you'd like to get in touch or suggest any future subjects that we'll cover, please do get in touch with us via Instagram. We're at theparent.hood. But in the meantime, thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.